Welcome to episode 11 of Theatre Audience Podcast. I'm Natalie and I'll be bringing you the news, reviews, interviews and recommendations of the next must-see theatre. We'll be discussing what's on, what's been and gone, the next hot tips and friendly advice on where to sit and how to get those best tickets. So I hope that you've had a wonderful Christmas and are looking forward to seeing some shows and plays over the festive period. I was lucky enough to spend the whole day at the National Theatre seeing part one and two of My Brilliant Friend at the Olivier. I managed to get a backstage interview with Ben Turner, who plays Nino Saratore, and I look forward to sharing this conversation with you in episode 12 of Theatre Audience Podcast. And now onto the main reviews. Girl from the North Country at the Gielgud Theatre, with backstage dressing room interviews with Ferdy Roberts, who plays Dr. Walker, and Gemma Sutton, who plays Catherine Draper. And White Christmas at the Dominion Theatre. Girl from the North Country at the Gielgud Theatre. So this was written and directed by Connor McPherson, with music and lyrics by Bob Dylan and musical orchestration and arrangement by Simon Hale. This production has had such rave reviews when it was at the Old Vic in July 2017. It then transferred to the Noel Coward Theatre in the December of that year, and then it has been to New York at the Public Theatre in September 2018. And then it's been playing recently since September 2019 at the Royal Alexandra Theatre in Toronto. So this production has literally just reopened at the Gielgud Theatre on the 10th of December. I was so excited, as I did not get the chance to see this show at the Old Vic, and it's been recommended by so many friends. So the play itself is set in Duluth, Minnesota in 1934. It's about a time-weathered guest house in the heartland of America, where one group of wayward souls have old dreams that may hold the promise of new beginnings. As they pass in and out of each other's lives, their stories awake beauty, passion and fury, complemented by songs. So Connor McPherson is a celebrated playwright. He's written The Weir and The Seafarer. He writes and he directs, and this universal and heartbreaking story about family and love is something that is true to his heart. In the programme notes, it says, "What I was looking for here were songs that give the performers the chance to lean into something emotionally." He says, "It was like working on a play with music, with a composer who can give you any song you want, but who demands no artistic control." And the reviews say, the Observer says, "Number one theatre show of the year." And the Times says, "A show that transports the soul. Incredible." So with all these recommendations, I was very, very excited to go and see Girl from the North Country, and particularly intrigued to have a conversation backstage with a friend of mine, Ferdy Roberts, who's playing the part of Dr. Walker. So here's our conversation before he warms up for the opening night of the show at the Gielgud Theatre. So I'm backstage at the Gielgud Theatre with Ferdy Roberts, who's playing Dr. Walker in Girl from the North Country. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
So I've seen you loads previously in shows, predominantly Shakespeare and Filter.
Yeah.
I think there was a Macbeth, a Midsummer's Dream.
There was a Twelfth Night, a Midsummer's Dream, a Macbeth.
Yeah, so... Yeah. This is a bit of a departure from that. Obviously, you've got a huge resume of theatre and film and TV. tell me about Dr. Walker in this production.
Dr. Walker is he's sort of the narrator of the piece,
nice.
Introducing the audience to the world of Duluth, Minnesota in 1934. He is the doctor of the town, And he sort of, yeah, he's the only one who talks directly to the audience, and weaves in and out of the narrative. I don't get to sing, apart from backing vocals, which is a shame.
I guess
in a way that's, I mean, it's difficult because I don't want to give too much away about it, but yeah, he's sort of ethereal. I'll give you that.
Yeah, no spoilers, because obviously I'm going to see the show later on this evening. And so this production, I mean, it's highly acclaimed, and you've been in Toronto with the show.
Yeah, we opened it in Toronto a couple of months ago, did 2 months there, and then came back and opened officially last night.
Mm-hmm. The press night, how did that go?
Really well. Yeah, it was great, I think. There was a lot of people who'd seen it before and found new things in it, and things that maybe they didn't notice the first time around or second time around. It is a show that it's a show I think that you get more out of the more you come. It's one of those.
You discover more.
There's lots of, because the play is set in a guest house in Duluth. It's, you're sort of, as an audience, you're required to follow various characters and their narratives, some of which don't end, some of which do end. it's a great piece to do, because it's so, I want to say, so sort of so different to what you'd expect from a musical. It's a play with music, with songs. And in some cases, people have said that the songs don't necessarily push the narrative along in the way that a musical tends to traditionally do, if you know what I mean.
So it just tells that moment.
Yeah.
And now we're going to cut forward 3 years within this song.
Yeah.
What happened next?
Or they're there to sort of tease an audience to find the narrative and find why that song is relevant to that particular character. I mean, it's really clever. It's really clever. And Simon Hale, who's the orchestrator, has done an extraordinary job on reorchestrating the songs, some of which we know really well, some of them we don't. You know, there's one particular song that, when I saw it at the Old Vic originally, I had no idea, I'd never heard it before. I went away and listened to Dylan's version of it and was like, oh my God,
that's just
terrible. Dylan's song is, it's awful when he sings it, but in what Simon's done to it here is just magical.
Very interesting. What's your favourite moment in the show?
Oh, I can't. There's so many. Yeah, there are loads. I mean, I'm lucky enough to be able to sort of come and go out of the narrative, so I get to sit and watch quite a bit of it from the wings.
Okay. So you're not like a watching narrator, you're not on stage.
Not on stage all the time, no. Like I say, Dr. Walker introduces the world at the beginning and comes in and out, and Dr. Walker ties it up at the end. Sort of.
I'm like, is this going to be one of those productions that I'm thinking about? Like,
well, do you know what?
When I saw it 3 days time, and go, oh, but what about that? Is it one of
when
those?
When I saw it at the Old Vic, I sort of walked away going, I'm not quite sure what I've just seen. I'm not quite sure what I've just experienced. I knew I'd watched something that was brilliant and magical and heartbreaking, and then about 10 days later, I sort of, something just landed. And I went, oh my God, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
There are some amazing sort of very, very discreet biblical references.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm going to say sort of get, some almost nativity-esque.
Okay.
Which a lot of people don't pick up on. And then when you mention it
I'll
to them
looking
after,
for them
when
now.
You mention it to them afterwards, they go, oh my God, wow. I didn't notice that. I did notice it, but it wasn't bang, you know, it wasn't in the face. It's very clever. Yeah, it's really clever.
So, favourite moment?
It's hard to say, really. Possibly the end. There's a song at the end which Katie Braben, who plays Elizabeth, sings, and it genuinely sends tingles down your spine. It's beautiful. She sings it beautifully, and Simon's orchestration is beautiful. So possibly that.
I look forward to that.
Possibly that.
Mm. And so the show's running till
February the 1st.
Uh-huh.
And then it opens on Broadway, not with this company, but with a full American company.
Oh, right.
Which, because it was picked up by the Public Theatre in New York,
uh-huh.
and they did it in New York last year, I think.
Oh, right.
I think it was last year. And then, yeah, so it opens a week after we finish here on Broadway.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see how theirs goes.
Yeah. You're going to go and see it?
Yeah. Oh, I know. I don't think we can go and see it. No.
Oh.
Hi, Finn. Sorry.
Are you in the middle of something?
Yes, can I have 2 minutes?
Yeah, of course.
Thanks, mate. Sorry. No, it was Finbar Lynch, who is extraordinary in the play.
What does he play?
He plays Reverend James Marlowe.
Oh, okay. I'm
not going to give you any more.
No. Oh, I'm really excited. I'm really looking forward to seeing this. Is this like anything else you've been in before?
Not really, no. I mean, it's... I've not done a musical.
You don't normally do musicals.
No, I don't. I mean, I it's interesting because, when I saw it originally at the Old Vic, I sat there going, if Filter, my theatre company that I co-run with Oliver Dimmesdale and Tim Phillips, if Filter had done a musical, it would be like this. So it's not too far removed from the world that we sort of play around with in terms of...
Yeah, because you've always added a lot of music to your show.
And
like
sound
Midsummer Night's Dream. You had the,
the
snorkelling...
The snorkelling thing. The London snorkelling thing.
Yeah, and in that Macbeth you experimented
with... We experimented with sound and music in that as well, yeah. So it's not too far removed from that.
Hmm.
And it's... You know, in terms of the way that Connor works, you know, he doesn't, or he hasn't done on this production anyway, he doesn't sort of prescribe how you should do it, you know what I mean?
Mm.
He responds to what you give him, which is the way that
really
I really like working that
creative.
Way, you know? Yeah, because you feel ownership over the work, you know, which is important to... It's hugely important to Filter's work
as
well. So.
And so what advice would you give to sort of budding young actors or people that are hoping to enter the profession? Honest.
Well, that's a tricky question. What advice? Keep going.
Or what advice has someone else given
to you
that you've kept in the back
of your... There's a young guy here who's an usher. Here at the theatre, who I spoke to last night at the party, you know, and he's just come out of drama school, and he's bursting with energy and bursting with creativity, you know. And I was talking to him last night, and I was going, look, you know, the thing is, what the sort of blessing for me when I was at drama school was that I connected with all my contemporaries. We all challenged each other to sort of. We all, in different ways, and pushed each other down sort of different avenues, if you like, creative avenues. And I think that was that for me. Looking back, was sort of the moment when we went, "Let's make a company out of this," because there's something really exciting.
You've
got the creative energy
and the time.
Don't rely on anybody else to
give
you the chances. I think, in a way, that making your own work. Discovering your own voice creatively is really, really important. You know, now more than ever, really, we need those sort of young, challenging voices to challenge what's going on in the world. You know, I think so. I would advise, look at your people around you and your contemporaries and your friends, and make your own work. Go for it. Mm, you know, don't excellent. Give up. Don't let them tell you you can't do it.
Good. Brilliant. Well, thanks so much for letting me come and chat to you in your dressing room.
Thank you very much.
For the show. And I know there's people knocking at the door.
Yeah, we've got to get our, we've got to get warm, our warm up going on. Yeah.
Good. Well, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Take care.
And you. Thank you very much.
So the curtain's just gone down on the second act of Girl from the North Country, and it was the most beautiful, sublime, poignant, emotional, hypnotic piece of storytelling. It was just beautiful. So I'll collect my thoughts and then I'll yeah, it was just beautiful. Beautiful. So I've had a moment to collect my thoughts, and I think when you see a piece of theatre like this that really touches your heart and your soul and your mind and moves you, it makes it very difficult for you to immediately review or be critical or even try and make sense of. And it's interesting because in the conversation with Ferdy that I had backstage prior to going to see the production, he did say that it's one of those productions that you maybe have to see again and again because you find different things in it each time. And I think this is definitely one of those productions that I will be recommending highly to all of you and to friends and family, and definitely something that I will try and see again before the 1st of February. So anyway, I'm walking out of the theatre and round to the stage door, where I am fortunate enough to have a conversation with Gemma Sutton, who is playing the part of Catherine Draper. And here's our conversation. So I'm backstage at the Gielgud Theatre with Gemma Sutton, who's playing the role of Kate Draper in Girl from the North Country.
Hi, Natalie.
Thank you for inviting me to your dressing room after the show. You must be exhausted.
A little bit, not too bad. We had our press night last night, so that was obviously a big, exciting night. But it's been a good night tonight, which is always important. The night after press night, always a good show. So.
Yeah. And how did the press night go?
Oh, it was wonderful. Really brilliant standing ovation and lots of nice people at the party saying lovely things, and you know, it's a revival, so you always worry that it's not going to stand up to the version that was here in the West End a few years ago, but so many people just said that they'd enjoyed it as much or if not more, and thought the casting was really interesting because nearly everybody is new in the cast. There's two people that have did it the first time round.
Oh wow.
So lots of changes.
Mm. And so you've just come back from a couple of months.
Yeah. We had 9 weeks in Toronto, which was just a really great time to explore the show, obviously become comfortable with it, really bond as a company. So it has actually meant that us opening in the West End has been slightly less stressful than it sometimes is with opening West End shows.
Because I suppose you're like, we've got this, we know what we're doing, we know it's a great show, it's just a case of turning it around in a different space.
Absolutely.
It's quite different to...
It's smaller than the Royal Alexandra Theatre in Toronto, and also it's more front on and square. Toronto was quite a wide house. The main thing that differs when you go into different theatres is the sound, so you're just hearing slightly different things, and that takes a bit of time to get used to. But it's really nice. It sits beautifully in here because it's a real intimacy. Mm. And this piece really demands the intimacy,
yeah,
I think.
It needs that. And I've heard a lot about the show and I was so excited to come and see it, and I was like, this is a show that I have to sit in the stalls and I have to be quite near, because I just want to love it. Very recently I saw Death of a Salesman and I was up in the Grand Circle and it completely destroyed it. I could tell it was wonderful. I could feel how people must have been feeling down there, but I just felt this kind of, I want to be down there. So I was like, need to book stalls, we're okay.
Yeah.
Know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But as you say, the sound quality was superb.
Oh, good.
It was just perfect. And I've been to a lot of shows recently where I'm just slightly thinking, I don't know, maybe it's playing over my head, maybe, you know, but it was just...
Oh, that's
spot
good.
On. It was beautiful.
Sometimes a tendency to over amplify in musicals, but actually all that, you just end up fighting and trying to top the band, try to top the singing and the dialogue, and it doesn't work. It does work with some of the pop shows, but this just demands a real delicacy and to make sure that everybody's really listening to everything that's going on. So yeah, I've enjoyed working on it, and when I saw it at the Old Vic, I think that was what stood out to me the most, was the sound design. It's just, it's beautiful, delicate. You could hear every single instrument,
every ending of every word, just clarity, just beautiful, and just lovely having the musicians on stage as well, but yet sort of they're kind of plunged into dark, beautiful stuff going on with the lighting as well, but just they're there, we know they're there. But it's about the storytelling, and then you, I don't know the name, the lady who was on the drums, in the foreground as well, but then disappeared, and but just part of the action as well. Yeah, very, very cleverly done.
Absolutely. There's actually not that many musicians. We've got piano, bass, guitar, and violin. And then it's the actors that play, different actors play the drums, and then we have the harmonica. So it's amazing the sound that's made just with a very few people, but that's due to the excellent arrangements and orchestrations by Simon Hale, who was very much part of making those Dylan songs sound so very different, which is what, when people come and see the show, they think, that's not how Rolling Stone sounds, or that's not how Tight Connection of My Heart sounds. If you listen, if you watch the videos on YouTube, they're completely different. Completely different.
It was actually interesting. There were three people in front of me. I got a theatre etiquette anger.
Yeah.
And they actually had their phones out, and they had obviously some kind of singing app, and they were checking because the words were moving up the screen. They were literally, I think they were trying to check if it was exactly the same wording, and I actually had to tap them on the shoulder. Four people said thank you to me. They went, thank you for being forthright. I was like, no, put your phones away.
Wow.
Come to the theatre to get away from the screen.
Yes.
But
I suppose that just shows what people expect of jukebox musicals.
Mm.
They expect, I think people maybe do expect to come and see the Bob Dylan story, and it's,
oh, and I think
it has nothing to do with
his
autobiography.
Yeah,
I mean, there's a wonderful thing that happened in Toronto quite early on. The first few lines of the show starts, which is a song called Sign on the Window. And this guy got up from his seat and went, this isn't Dylan. Stomped out of the auditorium, got this ghetto blaster that he must have brought somehow.
What?
And then started to play Dylan songs really loudly in the foyer.
How far into the run were you?
We were probably a couple of weeks in.
Oh,
but it really
goodness.
Made us all laugh so much.
So you had to hold it together
we couldn't hear it. Luckily, we didn't hear it,
on stage.
It was
the
stage management writes show reports every night. And so
and
we heard by that,
for.
You'll never guess what happened last
oh,
night
my
kind
goodness.
Of thing.
Oh, wow. and for you, I mean, your character... she sort of arrives from nowhere all of a sudden in the middle of the first act, and it's quite a refreshing moment because we've been drawn into this world, and she's quite sort of different and sort of knows her mind. She's quite
It's what's interesting about this piece is that we meet characters, and it might just be for a
fleeting
amount, and then they disappear again. And some people find that difficult because they want each story thread or each character to have, you know, to have a journey throughout the piece. But I think what Connor has done, the director and the writer, he's reflected human life, which is that sometimes people come into our lives and then they disappear and we never hear about them again. It's this one scene in the middle of the first act that I have with the character of Jean, who is in the piece throughout. He is the son of Nick, who owns the boarding house where all these characters come through. She's his ex-girlfriend and she's moving on. She's getting out of Duluth, which is just, it's depressing. Obviously, we're in the middle of the Great Depression. Jean's going nowhere. He's an alcoholic. And he says he's a writer, but he's never written anything in the last, however long. And she's had the opportunity to marry a guy who is a lawyer and he has more prospects. And unfortunately, women in that time, there wasn't that... They often had to choose not for love, but for a better life, really. And that's very, very sad. Mm. So she is battling her inner... What her heart's saying, what her head is saying. But that's not to say that Jean is acting very irresponsibly, so he's not good for her anyway.
No. Mm. But it's amazing that all that's conveyed in quite a short scene in that beautiful song. That was gorgeous. And then you're on for the rest of it as ensemble.
As my other character, Marjorie.
Marjorie!
She wears glasses and she's quite shy, and then when she's had a drink, comes out of his shell a bit more. Those ensemble scenes are so much fun because, again, Connor, director, really gave us...
Ladies and gentlemen, stage show will be closing in 15 minutes' time. That's 15 minutes' time. Thank you very much.
That's to prove that we really are in the theatre.
He wasn't sure. In 15, I'll give you 15.
That's nice. That's Paddy.
Where were we?
So my other character.
Lots of stage business. Yeah. It was like lots of business. There was a lovely moment where you were like, everyone was taking their turn, in the party scene, everyone was sort of taking their turn at the microphone, and there's this moment where your character was like, oh, now I'm singing, and now I'm carrying the mic across the stage.
I know. Beautiful. It's all...
No, really clever. Lots of little... things to watch.
Oh, that's good. Audience, Connor really wanted us to, for us, the ensemble characters at the back, to be as distracting as possible to the characters in the front of the stage that have the dialogue, because that's what a party would be like. Yeah. You wouldn't be able to hear what certain characters are saying, and he wants that feeling of madness, and for the audience to be sort of... Obviously, they know where to look and stuff because it's been well directed, but they want that feeling of chaos and noise and the reality of a party.
It was beautiful. Absolutely. There was a moment where they've rushed in, they can't find their son, and you've got this drama playing out in the foreground. In the background, people are just getting pissed and they don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, why? How? What? And it's beautiful. It's because it's natural. I think that's what's so different about this piece. You've got this spectrum of musical theatre. And this kind of, for me, it's a play with music.
Yeah.
Yes, we call it a musical. But it's, it's not underscored all the way. It's also jukebox, but yet not, and it's just... The songs come at those sort of heightened moments of drama. It's just poignant, sort of little dreamlike, ethereal sequences, and then that moment's gone.
Yeah, it's absolutely right. And what's interesting about it is that we think with musicals, that with integrated musicals, that the songs have to move the story on in some way. And what this piece and what Connor absolutely intended with it is that the songs don't actually necessarily move the story on. They are to present a colour or a tone or an atmosphere or a fantasy or the character's inner desires that are never realised. And so it leaves quite a profound effect on the audience. And what I love about it is that it's completely to be self-interpreted by each and every member of the audience. When we were working in Toronto, I would walk back to the apartments and I'd hear the audience around me talk about the show, and I used to find it incredible because, they'd be working out everything, you know. So did Marianne and Joe get together? Who was the father of the baby?
Yeah.
You know, all sorts of questions. I don't want to give too much away, because you have to come and see the show.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. But I feel like I need to come again just to piece... It's like a little jigsaw, and just to put those little pieces together. Not that that always has to be solved.
No.
It's quite nice to have it as something you just think back to and go, but what if? Yeah. No, lovely. And so... thing that I always ask is, you know, where did you, I mean, let's do your little resume of I mean, you have done a lot of theatre. I mean, you've done literally, I was looking through your resume and I was like, oh yes, I love all these shows. I was like, Gypsy, good. Chicago, Carousel, yes, Hairspray, Boyfriend.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, don't worry. The magic of theatre, the excitement backstage.
Yeah.
That wasn't 15 minutes.
No,
is he checking?
We're all right.
Isn't it? Follies, Gone with the, you know, beautiful, fantastic shows. What would you say was your sort of, apart from this, obviously, your favourite role that you've played so far?
Well,
I bet they're all like,
gosh,
wonderful in different ways.
I feel like I always try and get something out of every job I do, and I choose my jobs because I want a different challenge. Now, the one that always pops up is Gypsy, because it was such an exciting thing to be part of, and Imelda was so incredible. And I had the amazing opportunity to play June for a lot of the run, which was her younger daughter. And then I took over as Louise, who is the character that has sort of the more of the journey, and she becomes Gypsy Rose Lee. So that whole process of playing Imelda's two daughters and really getting to know Imelda, and we used to have to rehearse in her dressing room because we didn't just... That's how it worked and with preparing for playing Louise. And it was just a magical time. And then every night there'd be someone amazing in the audience, like Meryl Streep or Hugh Jackman or French and Saunders, or just every night felt like a theatrical event. So I'll always remember that one. I enjoyed working at the National on Follies enormously this year. It's an incredible building. There's such respect for every single person who works there. There's a backstage bar which is just great fun, like at the end of a show, never before, obviously. They even have it, like a GP there and a canteen, and you just looked after so well. So I enjoyed that. What else? Hairspray. What I did Hairspray on tour a few years ago is one of my favourite shows anyway, because
I
just think it's got such a great message.
Yeah. This production coming soon with Michael Ball. So what advice would you give then to young people who are sort of hoping and praying to enter the profession?
I think always remembering that it's a long game, and that it requires an enormous amount of luck. I always think back to the jobs that I've done, it's always been opportunity meets preparation and a lot of luck. So it baffles me, and it just disappoints me so much that so many of my very talented friends haven't had the opportunities that they deserve. I think the main thing is to look after your mental health. I'm so pleased that over the last few years that's become much more important. People have realised that they need to take real care. We all need to take care of each other, but not to give yourself a hard time because of social media particularly is not, it's not real life, it's everyone's fabricated, you know, perfect
thing. I guess it's a pressure that just wasn't there 10 years ago.
No,
you know,
absolutely.
It was your own pressures and pressures that other people put on you and everything else. But
we don't realise how the things that we see every day, how much they do actually infiltrate you. So you have to be so, so careful. I've had every part-time job going under the sun, and I will continue to, because it's the only way to survive in the times when you're not working, because it's never constant ever. And I've actually tried to find fun and somehow enjoy my other part-time work, because I don't want to be miserable. And I've learned a lot, and you know, the things I've done, and if nothing else, I've got loads of stories to tell of really hilarious, funny things that happened when I was handing canapés out at Chelsea Flower Show to Andrew Lloyd Webber, and he refused my canapé. I thought, well, yeah.
It's all right, we've been there. I was on Beauty Counter and Zoe Ball refused my perfume spray. So,
and all that just makes you stronger, and that's life is chaotic and crazy, and there's no rhyme or reason to it, really. I've always kept like close to my family and my friends, and I've always made sure I've got lots of other things outside of theatre that make me happy, because it won't make you happy. Obviously the wonderful times are the wonderful times, but it is difficult sometimes.
Brilliant, thank you for your honesty. It has been so lovely chatting to you.
I know you
must be exhausted, so thank you very much for chatting to me on my podcast.
It's a pleasure. All the best with it.
Thank you.
So a huge thank you to Ferdy Roberts and Gemma Sutton for giving me the time to have conversations with them about the production and about tips and advice for young people wishing to enter the profession. My top tips for Girl from the North Country. So this production closes on the 1st of February 2020. The production is 2 hours and 30 minutes, including an interval. I would say age 13 and above is my recommendation for this production. It's highly recommended by me, and I got my tickets on TodayTix. These were rush tickets and they were £25 on the day, and I was fortunate enough to be in stalls K7. But due to all the 5-star reviews, I would say you may need to just get in there as early as you can and book a couple of days in advance in order to get the best deals. Irvin Berlin's White Christmas, the musical at the Dominion Theatre. So the Christmas holidays are upon us, and it's a last opportunity to catch this feel-good family musical before it closes on the 4th of January. So Irvin Berlin was born in 1888 and died in 1989. He was aged 101. He's an American songwriter, composer, and lyricist, and was widely considered one of the greatest songwriters in American history. He owned the Music Box Theatre on Broadway, and his music forms part of the Great American Songbook. He wrote 1,500 songs and scores for 20 original Broadway shows, 15 original Hollywood films, and was nominated for 8 Academy Awards. He won Best Original Song in 1943 with White Christmas in Holiday Inn. His songs have reached the top of the charts 25 times, and extensively these have been re-recorded by numerous singers, including the likes of Frank Sinatra, Judy Garland, Barbara Streisand, Cher, Diana Ross, Bing Crosby, Nat King Cole, and Billie Holiday, to name but a few. George Gershwin called him the greatest songwriter that ever lived. So it's no wonder he received Tony Awards, Grammy Lifetime Achievement Awards, and was in the Songwriters Hall of Fame and won a Presidential Medal of Freedom. He got a Congressional Gold Medal from President Eisenhower for celebrating patriotic songs, including God Bless America. So with the music and lyrics by Irvin Berlin and a book by David Ives and Paul Blake, I'm very much looking forward to this production that comes from a sellout season at The Curve in Leicester. It's directed by Nikolai Foster, who I recently saw directing Annie, which went on national tour. I reviewed this in episode 7 of Theatre Audience podcast at the New Wimbledon Theatre with a backstage interview with actor Sam Freeman. So it's the interval at White Christmas at the Dominion Theatre. And I have to say, I'm feeling a little bit underwhelmed. I think the problem is that this theatre, the Dominion, is one of the largest, I think it's the fifth largest theatre in the West End. So we've got a capacity of 2,075 people. And I think because it's just stalls and circle, it's so incredibly wide. And there's a huge overhang over half of the auditorium in the stalls. And it just lacks that intimacy that some of the other West End theatres have, like Anne Juliet that's playing at the Shaftesbury, for example. I don't know. I mean, I was at the Troubadour recently and I saw Sleepless, the musical, which is just completely open and has flexi seating of 1,000 to 2,000. But it was absolutely full, which meant that we really got a sense of sort of camaraderie in the audience, and sort of when people would laugh or clap, it was kind of infectious. And I mean, I think it's probably because it's Christmas week, people are still away, it's the Friday after Christmas, literally 2 days after. But the auditorium was quite empty. We had seats in WW, and we managed to move right forward to something like G or K. And so we had a wonderful view, and it just didn't have that horrible overhang. So we got a really great sound. So that said, because recently I've seen things here like Bat Out of Hell, and American in Paris, and obviously We Will Rock You ran for ages. But those are sort of, you know, big, massive shows. And they were, you know, sold out. And so it really kind of lifted the whole thing. So that's just about the venue in general. It's a bit of a soulless theatre, and I've been to quite a few. It reminds me in many ways of that theatre where I saw Chicago, The Ambassadors, on Broadway. Anyway, that said, it's generally an aesthetically pleasing production. I loved being able to see the band on stage, up raised in the corner, so in a similar spot to where they are in Dear Evan Hansen. And this was a band of seven hugely talented musicians, some of them doubling up on instruments. I learned something interesting in the interval from my husband, who's a musician. He used to dep on shows in the West End, that if you play several instruments, you get sort of a double or triple fee. So that's interesting. Actors don't get that if they're triple threats, singer, actor and dancer. So that was just interesting banter in the interval. So this is a timeless romantic comedy to warm the hearts of all ages, a festive feel-good show with a multi-generational appeal. And I look forward to seeing the second half and letting you know my views on that. So the curtain's down after White Christmas at the Dominion Theatre. I much preferred the second half. The audience en masse made an exodus forward into the empty seats. There were very famous songs such as Blue Skies and Sisters and White Christmas, which were really heartwarming. Spoiler alert, the snow was beautiful. Individual performers then. So we've got Danny Mac, who played Bob Wallace. He's been in Sunset Boulevard and Strictly Come Dancing Final. And he's soon going to lead in Pretty Woman, which comes out in 2020, alongside Amy Atkinson. And then we had Dan Burton, who plays Phil Davis. He's Olivier nominated, and he's been in things such as Gypsy and Singing in the Rain and The Jersey Boys. And then we had Claire Howells, who played one of the Haynes sisters. She played Judy. Now, I saw her in 42nd Street playing the part of Peggy Sawyer. She's a fantastic tap dancer. And she got a great belter of a song in the second half, and has an amazing voice. Danielle Hope played the other sister, Betty. She's the winner of the 2011 Over the Rainbow, so she played Dorothy in Andrew Lloyd Webber's Wizard of Oz. And then Brenda Edwards played Martha Watson. She's got a fantastic voice. She had a few solos, particularly in the second half. She came fourth in 2005 X Factor finale, and she's also a Loose Women's presenter. And then Michael Brandon played the general. He is Dempsey of Dempsey and Makepeace fame. So I think for me, the music was beautiful. It was lovely just having an evening hearing these songs sung by a very talented cast. The best thing for me was the choreography. So Stephen Meir did the choreography. He's fantastic. He's a second-time Olivier Award winner and Tony nominee. He worked with Sir Matthew Bourne on the choreography of Mary Poppins, and he's just literally been given a CBE. So overall, The Times says this is a terrific dose of pure escapism, and The Telegraph says a glorious revival. I enjoyed it as an evening out. It was a great piece with everything coming together, the singing, the dancing, and the acting. But for me, the capacity of that venue just didn't do the production any favours. If I think about Annie that I saw recently, directed by the same director, and that went on tour to Wimbledon and various other, you know, several different venues across the country, it just felt more intimate, even though I was right up at the back of the grand circle. So overall, go and see it yourself. Thoroughly enjoyable, but in comparison to some of the shows that I've seen recently, it ticks the Christmas box. So I'm joined by audience member Sam Stark, who has just come out of White Christmas at the Dominion. What did you think of the show, and who would you recommend it to?
White Christmas is definitely a show I would recommend if you're looking to see a show during the festive period, which also has the hallmarks of a traditional Broadway musical. I would recommend this show to anyone who wishes to embrace that Broadway feeling. I'd also recommend White Christmas to anyone who wants to see the amazing chemistry that's shown between actors such as Danny Mac and Dan Burton, as well as Claire House and Danielle Hope.
Thanks a lot, Sam. Top tips for Irving Berlin's White Christmas the musical at the Dominion Theatre. So this is a run don't walk situation, as this production, due to its festive nature, closes on the 4th of January. The production is 2 hours and 30 minutes long, including an interval, and no children under the age of 5 are admitted. There's loud gunshot, strobe, haze and low smoke. Sadly, the souvenir programme was a whopping £10, so I didn't buy one. Happy to pay £7 for a souvenir programme at Anne Juliet, for example, but £10 I feel is pushing it. If you think about the National Theatre, they charge £5 for their programme, and you can also get a paper copy, which is free, which just has the cast list and a little bit of information. Sadly, they don't do this, so it's £10 or nothing, which puts you in a bit of a gin and tonic versus souvenir programme situation. I chose the gin and tonic. So we bought our tickets on Today Tix in the Boxing Day sale. These were £20 and we're at the back of the stalls and managed to move forward. I think you can get rush tickets still each day for £25, and I'm sure they've got some good deals in the last week of this run if you go to the box office on the day. So now for my finale and curtain call. A huge thank you to Gemma Sutton and Ferdy Roberts for our backstage dressing room interviews on Girl from the North Country. In episode 12 of Theatre Audience Podcast, I go backstage and have a chat with actor Ben Turner, who plays Nino in My Brilliant Friend at the National Theatre. I was also speaking to Jason Kravitz, who's coming to London to do his show. Jason, tell me about your show and the guests appearing, and when and where people can watch your show and buy tickets.
Hey, thanks, Natalie. Yes, I'm so excited to be coming back across the pond to London to do my show Off the Top, the completely improvised cabaret. Now, what is a completely improvised cabaret? Well, it's a lot of things. It's comedy, it's music, improv, it's basically a life story in song, where every moment of the show, every song, every lyric, every casually dropped name, every backstage anecdote, every Broadway classic and Sondheim standard is made up by me on the spot based on audience suggestions. And I like to say it's a one-man show, but it's really not, because I've got this amazing, talented, and very daring band backing me up, plus different guest stars every night, and they're incredible. I've got Ruth Bratt and Sarah Louise Young, both standouts from the show Showstoppers. I've got Comedy Store veteran Stephen Frost, West End and Broadway star Rachel Tucker. I've got Joe Stilgo, Alan Cox, and, oh, the fabulous Le Gâteau Chocolat. And what will they be doing? I have no idea, and neither do they, really, because, as I said, it's all made up on the spot. The show's going to be at Crazy Cocks at Brasserie Zadel, which is just off Piccadilly Circus, if you don't know, and it starts performing on January 13th at 7 p.m., and we run through January the 19th with a different guest star, sometimes two, every night. And tickets are available at their website, which is www.brasseriezadel.com, and you can also find a link to tickets at the show website, which is www.offthetop.nyc. Thanks, Natalie.
Oh, that sounds brilliant, Jason. So that's something I'll definitely be going to see in January. Why not grab a ticket for one of the productions mentioned in this episode? Please tune in next time and recommend us to all your friends and family. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Theatre Audience Podcast, and do send us any recommendations of things you think we should see and review. If you've enjoyed the show, please follow us on Spotify, subscribe and rate us on iTunes, and leave us a little review. Until next time, goodbye, and thank you for listening.